And it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College, paid for by Kevin Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Malbus Shell Station, the Shell Station in Malbus, and on Highway 98 in Daphne. Good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Mark. How's everything going for you?
Everything is going very, very well.
Well, good to hear. Good. Now, where's our boss lady? Is she off today?
Well, yesterday was her birthday.
Oh, well,
happy
birthday.
And she did a bunch of stuff with her friends, so she is taking the day after her birthday off.
Well, I'll have to text her a happy birthday.
Okay.
But thanks for letting me know that. Okay. All right, so here we are, another crazy week in many respects. There's never a dearth for news. There's no question about that. Now, the question is, what are we going to talk about today?
Mm.
So, I've got my list, okay? And, of course, I think at the top of my list is the Trump indictment. So, I want to talk about that. Then I want to talk about SCOTUS and this whole question about what's going on with the redistricting in Alabama. Surprise move by the Supreme Court, 5-4 decision. It's been challenged by our Attorney General, who really believes that we will win in court. So we'll see about that. I want to talk a little bit more about that.
So the Gulf Coast of Alabama, our region here, is under scrutiny by the Supreme Court of the United States.
Well, I think not just the Gulf Coast, but you could say every part. I mean, if they want a second black majority district, then where is that going to come from? The logic is, I think, down here. Okay, so Jerry Carl says he believes he's going to withstand this and he'll be okay. So let me get to it and we'll see.
Okay.
All right. I really want to go back and talk a little bit more about this whole debt deal. Okay. Just listening to the pros and the cons, I want to just get into it a little bit more depth, and I've just kind of kicked that around. I also need to mention this whole business of what's going on with China and, you know, harassing our naval warships in the Taiwan Straits and going after one of our reconnaissance aircraft, too, in that area. Then we've got, you know, more information about this question of Biden receiving bribes as a vice president. I want to talk about that. Then there's this really outrageous thing where the European Commission and the World Health Organization are now working together to come up with a passport approach to future pandemics. Now, I don't know about you, but lots of people didn't want to get the jab. Lots of people wouldn't have a passport. Now, how are we going to work this out, especially when if you're talking about getting a smallpox vaccination, that's different than the COVID. I mean, Biden had boosters, COVID, he had it all.
Right.
Still got it twice. So what are we talking about, aside from the fact that lots of people had bad health reactions? And I think that for the World Health Organization to be involved with this along these lines of mandating passports is outrageous. And the fact that Biden and them are in cahoots with them to try to give them that authority here remains to be seen, but I think it's something that we need to definitely, you know, fight hard against. I also want to talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend with a Pride Fest down here in Fairhope, and I'll give you some insights about that, and we'll talk more about that, along with the whole question of sex education and what that means for Alabama and what we really need to do in terms of making sure that the sex education manuals that they have are borderline pornography based on Eagle Forms analysis by Pat Ellis. So let's talk a little bit about that one. I also want to mention, if we have time, something about what's going on with Ukraine. There was a big dam that was broken there, which just takes you back to this, well, who did it, why they do it, and if they did it, and blah, blah, blah. So, and then I'll follow up end up with this whole question of the impeachment of the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, see what we can see a little bit about that. So, Mr. Mark, Here's the show. Let's get it going.
All right.
All right. Okay. So the Trump indictment. Okay. Let's frame this along the lines of, number one, what sort of classified information was found at Mar-a-Lago? Okay. According to the Trump people, Trump had declassified those pieces, those documents that were found, and so that's the end of the story. But CNN claims it has a 2021 tape that somehow got released, where Trump is talking to Mark Meadows and Mark's, I guess, his analyst, who's trying to, they're trying to interview Trump for a book that Meadows is doing. And in this tape, ostensibly, Trump says, you know, I didn't declassify XYZ. So lots of hoorah about the veracity of the tape. But I don't think that there's any question that you have to kind of look at this once again as part of what they have done to try to derail Trump, first from becoming president, and second, what they did when he became president. I mean, we've talked a lot about this, so I'm not going to go through all this again. But if you're going to argue that, you know, Trump needs to be prosecuted for violations of, you know, whatever laws there are pertaining to this, then let's try to understand, number one, that Trump was in negotiations with the proper authorities to turn over whatever materials should be turned over. Those negotiations ended in May of 21, if I'm not mistaken. And it's August of 21 when the big raid takes place. So you have to ask yourself, he's in negotiations, and yet they decide to raid. Why is that? And we're right back to square one with the only reasonable argument, which is they want to get Trump indicted for something. Okay? So let's frame this along the lines of the hypocrisy factor, the double standard factor, things that we've talked about here. And what exactly is that in terms of, you know, the current situation? Well, the current situation seems quite clear to be a manufactured case, especially when you consider what Hillary Clinton got away with. I mean, how much more evidence was necessary that she destroyed evidence that had been subpoenaed? How much more evidence do you need when you say that Comey comes on TV and says, we're not going to prosecute her? And that's a point that he didn't have the jurisdiction to do that, but he said it anyway. And yet, Clinton deliberately destroyed classified information she should not have had. So that's strike one against the idea that, you know, this is not a witch hunt. Here's strike two, even worse, is what people have found classified information in various places that Biden brought in there. Lots more documents than what Trump had in places that were not secure, whereas at least at Mar-a-Lago, they were secured until the FBI threw them on the floor so you could see all that stuff. But the point is, what's happened to all of that you know, angst over classified materials that Biden had? Well, absolutely nothing. So we're back to this question of Trump's in negotiations with the proper authorities. Negotiations break down. Next thing you know, Mar-a-Lago is raided. And yet we're sitting on Biden's case, which is far worse, particularly since, as vice president, he had no he had no authority to have this information outside of, you know, regular places where he could access them. But you see, it just doesn't matter, because the Democrats are absolute, and the deep state people don't want Trump. And again, we've laid this out before. I'm not going to lay it out again. But when you've got, you know, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, all of those people working to not only stop Trump from getting the presidency, but then they continue to go after him after he wins. These people are traitors. They should, and hopefully at some point, they will be prosecuted for what they did. Why they haven't been prosecuted remains a semi-mystery. The Durham report certainly laid out the case against them. But why didn't Durham go forward? I was on a Zoom meeting the other day, and former prosecutor, attorney general, district attorney, Joe DeGeneva, was talking about the fact that Durham just did not believe that he was going to be able to win in D.C. And as proof of that, he brought one case to them, and they ended up, this was a FISA case. This guy had changed information on the FISA request, and sure enough, he gets community service. So, I mean, that may be a reasonable argument in Durham's mind, but the fact of the matter is, he should have gone forward and taken his chances in court. I mean, who cares what your scoring is? I mean, are we keeping track, like, you know, Nixon, I mean, Sabin's wins? I mean, give me a break. He needed to prosecute these people, and he didn't. So that's a failure of the system. But here again, though, notice how the hypocrisy and double standard factor is there. And I think that's something that we need to kind of continue to think about as this really gets itself into, as we get into the 24 campaign. I mean, are they trying to tie Trump up with so many indictments and court cases that he won't be able to campaign? Well, I mean, that seems to be the current strategy. I will give DeSantis credit for defending Trump, and I think that it's important that there's Republican candidates all rally around him. But I guess it would be nice if they all just said, well, hey, we're backing out. Trump's going to be the nominee. We're going forward like that. But that ain't going to happen. I get that. But it's not a bad thought. So let's move on now to the question of the Supreme Court and what they did with Alabama. Surprising that Kavanaugh jumped ship and joined the liberal majority, okay, minority, okay, fine. But in the end, this question now is going to hinge on what Attorney General Marshall has been quoted as saying, that it's not over, that the district court that filed this originally, because it happened so quickly, that Alabama has the right to bring its case before that district court, and A.G. Marshall believes that he will be successful. So that's encouraging to hear that. What is of concern, though, is here you are trying to figure out, Alabama only has one black majority district. We've got to give Alabama two black majority districts. So, how do we do that? I would argue that the most logical place to look at is carving out something from the Gulf Coast area. I mean, Mobile has a majority black population, so the weight of the of that brings geography front and center. And again, they will gerrymander a district to make it, you know, be what they want. So in the end, until we hear more about this, I think that at this point, let's just see how the wheels of justice, you know, turn, and see where Attorney General Marshall is able to go in defending what we have on the books. If he can't be successful in that, then we'll just have to stand by to see how this works itself out. But the real danger is that they go beyond just the congressional districts. And if they start monkeying around with the redistricting that was done for the Senate and for the House in Alabama, then you've got a can of worms that's going to be open. And again, redistricting is never easy. It's never fun. And people are going to be upset about what happened. And I can tell you that the people of Spanish Fort were very upset about being put into Vivian Figure's district. I mean, it's just, it's a reality. So we'll just have to kind of bide our time to see how this plays itself out. But if this thing goes beyond just the congressional districts, then there's going to be turmoil in this state. And here again, coming at you like a speeding freight train is the campaigns that are going to start in 2023. Filing for to be a candidate for any of these upcoming offices is November 10th, 2023. And that's only a few months away. So if there's going to be a problem with redistricting across the board, it's going to throw everything into turmoil. So just saying, folks, stand by, okay? I mean, we're standing by on so many different issues. Climate change, this, that, the other, you know, Antifa, BLM, destruction of everything. So this is just add another one to the list of what to stand by for, okay? So moving on from that rather depressing piece of, you know, news, let's talk about what happened with China and these U.S. destroyer and a U.S. aircraft. So this happened about 5 or 6 days ago, but so it's technically old news, but it's important news. Okay, we have been talking about the China threat for a long time here. Okay. We've had Commander Cox on to talk, and again, he's a China expert, how China is playing this long game to displace the United States as the number one power in the world. And here again, notice how Xi has been able to maneuver himself into favorable positions across the world, okay? The Belt and Road program, his support of Russia in Russia's need, okay? the argument that he is more determined than ever to make sure that China prevails is certainly apparent in terms of what they've done in terms of their building up their military. Their aggressive diplomacy to try to win various countries over to their side. And so the latest example of that is Cuba has agreed to put some sort of a listening post, a spy post, in Cuba so that the Chinese can monitor U.S., you know, traffic of all sorts. Okay? Havana's going to get billions of dollars a year for doing that. If you look at the degree to which China has been able to influence countries in Africa and South America, how it's been able to buy, you know, natural resources that are scarce, lithium in the Congo and in Brazil. I mean, isn't it interesting that Biden shuts off our mineral development here while he pushes electric vehicles that are only going to be battery supplied by where? China. I mean, what does that mean, okay? And again, I'm going to talk more about Biden in a second and more information about his corruption. But for right now, the geopolitical reality is that Biden is giving the Chinese the very tools they need to become the number one power in the world. On the diplomatic front, as I've suggested, they're doing a lot of aggressive things. On the military front, and I know Commander Cox has talked about this, they have missiles that are, you know, quite capable of making sure the 7th Fleet, our Pacific Fleet, is neutralized in any possible battle that could come about as a result of the Chinese deciding, well, you know what, we're tired of fooling around with Taiwan, we're just going to go take it. So, I mean, if their military capabilities are of the order where we can't really support Taiwan or, for that matter, Japan or the Philippines, then what does that mean in terms of China's ability to have its will wherever it wants? So when we talk about all of this, you would think that Biden and them would be, you know, just setting their hair on fire, doing everything they could to make sure that deterrence, real deterrence, is there to make sure that Xi doesn't become tempted to do something with Taiwan that would trigger essentially a war. But Biden doesn't do anything like that. So, I mean, we're back to corruption 101. But we're also back to the fact that the deterrent factor has been lacking, not only in the fact that Taiwan has purchased all sorts of military equipment from us that has yet to be delivered. They're slow walking that. Just like they slow walked, you know, support for Ukraine, and now they're finally getting it, but, you know, one could argue that had that been done earlier as a deterrent, that perhaps Putin would have thought twice. But that's water under the bridge. I get that. So here we are with a Chinese ship cutting in front of an American destroyer in the Taiwan Strait, 150 yards away. It's something that is in international waters, you know, it's just not done, blah, blah, blah. But that's just a signal to the U.S., along with their complaints that we're the provocateurs. We shouldn't be going through the Taiwan Straits. It's international waters, so we have every right to do that. Just as we have every right to transit the South China Sea, where they have built up all of these islands and militarized them. And occasionally we test that and put ships out there. But again, this began with Obama and Biden. And the fact of the matter is, despite the fact that China continues to harass Philippine fishermen, Vietnamese fishermen, and the fact that the UN, you know, made a ruling through their international court that the Filipinos have every right to be in the South China Sea. Doesn't matter. And here again, we get back to, you know, political power as the number one issue. I mean, the UN can cry about, you know, violations of their rules and this and that. And we're back to, you know, if the Chinese want to do something, they're going to do it, regardless of what the Philippines complains about and whether or not the UN supports the complaint by the Filipinos, which they did. It just doesn't matter. So if that's the case that we're looking at in terms of China moving along to do its own thing, regardless of what barriers are there, regardless of what rules, norms, whatever, then we need to think carefully about things that Commander Cox has talked to you about. The long game plan and how we are not living up to what we need to do to make sure the Chinese understand that if they cross a line, there's going to be payment. And here again, run the reel back to Trump. You know, Trump's tariffs, Trump's assertions that, you know, we're not going to allow intellectual property to be just taken from us anymore. His attempt to try to get a handle on these 5,000 cases every year that the FBI reported in terms of Chinese spying. Now you don't hear anything about it. Of course, you know, FBI Director Wray is too busy, you know, launching FBI raids on parents and other people who are protesting what's going on in schools. But be that as it may, here you have, you know, a clearly defined major difference in how to handle China and how to handle other bad actors in the world, okay? But that's a different issue. As far as it goes to China, we're not doing anything that seems necessary, that the last administration did, because it recognized the problem, A, and B, acted on the problem. And here we are, and again, I guess I'm just going to have to get into this bribery thing, but the fact of the matter is that the Biden family has gotten lots of money from China along with other bad actors. I mean, Representative Comer has just unraveled this, and it's there. And so, you know, one could make the case that Biden is compromised. How do you explain why our minds are not being used to develop these natural resources that we have that are necessary for their wonderful electric vehicle program? I mean, they're telling the American people to go buy electric cars, and the only people who are going to get wealthy from this will be the Chinese, because they have the market on lithium. So as we look at the totality of this whole business with the Chinese trying to send a message to our destroyers and to our aircraft, they're testing Biden. And where Biden has fallen short in so many different places over the years in foreign policy, to the point where Secretary of Defense Gates, you know, wrote in his book that Biden was wrong on almost every foreign policy issue he ever had to deal with. And then you just look at what he did when he was in charge of Ukraine during the Obama years. He laid the groundwork for Burisma not to be, you know, investigated. When he famously sat there and told the world, hey, I was there and I told them they had to get rid of that prosecutor. And if they didn't, they weren't going to get the $1 billion that we had ready for them. And SOB, they did it. See, Lori's not here and I was good, okay? I could have said something bad, but I tried not to. All right, so, I mean, do you see what's happening here? I mean, the danger is that the Chinese are going to see this weakness as something so compelling that they're not going to be able to resist saying no to using force against Taiwan. And that could lead to something unexpected to them, because even Biden might have to call their hand and do something. And so we're the possibility of another war in Asia is looming. All I can say is I hope that those people who have some sound minds, who are left up there in D.C., can voice these kinds of concerns and move us in a different direction. But we shall see how that goes, okay? Let me just shift to this issue about the debt bill that passed, and I talked about this last week. But I watched Maria Bartiromo's Sunday show, and she had Kevin McCarthy on there, and she had Mike Lee. Kevin McCarthy, House leader, Speaker of the House, rather, extolled the virtues of the deal. And there are things which are certainly good. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, okay? I mean, but as he goes through and you know, lists all this stuff, okay, you have a fiscal year 24 non-defense spending is going to be flat, okay? That's good. Fiscal year 25, 1% increase. There's a cap on non-defense spending. Okay, that's good. Okay, there's the work requirement. That's good. They did rescind $29 billion out of unspent COVID money. I get that. They limited some spending, but again, the big question is, if you are going to agree to a $4 trillion debt limit increase, aren't you just asking for more spending? And so as you look at what McCarthy says and kind of get your hands around it, and then you listen to Senator Lee, who was opposed to it, did not vote for it, And the reasons why Lee did not go along with it, you know, center in part on the fact that we gave Biden a $4 trillion credit card. That the original bill that McCarthy put together, that the House Republicans voted on and passed, got changed over something extremely important to Lee, and I think it needs to be important to us. There was a provision in the first bill, and look, I know this is kind of, you know, in the weeds. I get that, but it's in the weeds, the details that make the difference in how you come to judge what just took place. Okay. So, in the original bill, there was a provision that would rein in any regulatory spending. Okay, meaning what? Okay, so an agency decides that it's going to, and the EPA is a classic one on this, decides that they're going to pass a regulation that's going to cost X amount of money for the taxpayers and others to live with. That sort of spending was going to be reined in. Those types of expenditures would have to be approved by Congress. Now, they tried to do this years ago, but I don't think it worked, because I think the threshold level was too high. So they were going to bring the threshold down to where they actually had, they could make a difference in holding down these regulatory, you know, laws. And they are laws. I mean, you have to live by them. May not be passed by Congress. But you see, here again, this gets you right into the whole question about what is going on in terms of these regulatory agencies. And the argument is they are unelected, they are pretty much liberal, they are going to do what they want to do. The only checks on them remain the power of the purse and the Supreme Court, which has actually come out against EPA on two different occasions, which I recently talked to you about. So the question of checks and balances, which is at the heart of the whole system, is severely lacking when it comes to the regulatory state. Okay? And conservative theorists have been arguing for the last 15 years, especially, of how dangerous it is to turn over all of this power to essentially the deep state. So for Senator Lee, for McCarthy not to fight for that rein in portion, just suggests that when taken as a whole with a $4 trillion credit card, that this debt bill does not meet the test. Okay? So I think that we're still going to see how this plays itself out. I do think that time will obviously tell. I will say this, and it's just listening to it, okay? And again, you know, we're down here, they're up there, this is in the minutia, could almost say manure, okay, but, you know, it is minutia. You know, call it detail, call it what you want, but trying to figure out how to get a handle on spending is something that is extremely difficult to deal with because of the intricacies of all of this and that, and the fact that, you know, they've built in increases to everything practically. I mean, for the Democrats, a 1% growth is a cut, okay? Because they have manufactured built-in increases that are unsustainable. But you see, fiscal sanity thought doesn't apply up there. I mean, you and I have budgets at home that we damn sure better be watching carefully. Okay? So the home budget analogy is great, except the people in Washington don't seem to get that. And once again, get back to the fundamental argument that was made to FDR. Tax and tax, spend and spend, elect and elect. Now we're at $32 trillion in debt, which is a national danger. Tax and tax, spend and spend, elect and elect. You don't think that's what's going on? Just go back and listen to what Lyndon Johnson was talking about when he brought about the war on poverty. He knew what he was doing in terms of providing income to those who needed it most. Fighting the war on poverty. Creating the welfare state. So they knew what they were doing then. They know what they're doing now in terms of bringing in all of these illegal migrants. Their game plan is exactly to make sure that these people are eligible to vote. And guess what? With motor voter, anybody can go get a motor, get registered to vote, getting your driver's license. Lots of states have gone back to the old ways prior to 9/11. You show up, get your driver's license. Hey, motor voter, here it is. Sign you right up. So where does all this lead us? Okay? I mean, this started off as a fiscal question. But notice how fiscal sanity is in direct contradiction to political expediency, which is the name of the game, tax and tax, spend and spend, elect and elect. Except now the bottom's about to fall out. So the real question that we have to ask, and our two sponsors of this show have a meeting with me and Jerry Carl this afternoon, and we are going to ask this question. How are you going to get the debt down? It's not sufficient just to balance the budget. You've got to do something to bring it down. And of course, Trump said it, nailed it the other day. You know, drill, baby, drill. That's where the money is. That's where the ability to pay this debt off. That's where it is. That's where it is. And I think that if you have any kind of fiscal sanity left in your brain, if you're up there in D.C., that's exactly what's going to happen. John Anderson, back in the 1980, I think the 1980 election.
I voted for John Anderson the first time I ever voted.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
All right, Mark. Well, I mean, one of the things that he said that kind of got him in trouble, but nevertheless, he wanted to have a 25-cent gas tax to do all sorts of different things. Well, I mean, look at it this way, okay? Just theoretically, let's just say we drill, baby, drill. Gas comes down to, you know, $2. Let's say 25 cents of that $2 goes to the debt reduction plan, okay? It may be 50 cents. I don't know. Some math genius out there can just kind of do the math and see how much it would take in terms of a gas tax to push that $32 trillion down and how long it would take. I mean, if the economy grows, more money's there, blah, blah, blah. See, but here's the problem. How are we going to be sure that the politicians are not going to take that 25 cents that's going to be part of the debt reduction and use that for their own political gain. How about earmarking forever? I mean, that's what you're dealing with. I remember that in the 2000 campaign, Bush and Gore were arguing about all this, and Gore was talking about how we've got a lockbox for the Social Security system. Yeah, well, sure. There ain't no lockbox, and so there's the danger of my fiscal sanity approach to debt reduction. Do you trust these people with any more money to actually be put down towards the debt? I don't know. I mean, we do kind of take seriously our debt at home. You know, we pay a little bit of extra here to get the stuff down. We give up this to get that done. Fiscal sanity 101. Does it apply in Congress? Don't think so. So here we are, treading water, getting deeper in debt. I don't know. I mean, it's just it's one of these things where it's staggering in terms of what's going on. So let's just hope that some fiscal sanity becomes part and parcel of where we are. Okay. All right, I'm starting to run out of a little bit of time here. Okay. I want to address this Pride Fest that was held Saturday the 3rd. Common Sense Campaign, Eagle Forum, one of the churches got involved with putting together what we termed it as Keep Fairhope Family Friendly, okay? We had about 70 people show up. We were able to put this together, short fuse. We did it as quickly as we could. 70 people at the Bluffs. We taped the presentations, and I'm going to put that out over the Common Sense Campaign on our Facebook as well as our website. And I'll send that to our folks soon, probably tomorrow, because today is a crazy day. But the point is, on Monday the 20th, I think it was, several of us spoke at the city council meeting to talk about this. And we were concerned about this whole question of what was going on with not only the pride question, because the pride question is really only one part of a big moving piece, okay? That moving piece is the transgender movement, and then subsumed under that or on top of that is the woke movement, okay? So essentially what we're getting at here is that it's wokeism that's driving the train, and subsets of wokeism, be it ESG, DEI, CRT. I mean, the alphabet soup is out there, but it's all part of the same thing. Aggressive transgenderism is part of this whole wokeism movement. And so our argument to the city council was essentially this. At least my argument was, the values of Alabama and as a community are along the lines of, we've already put into law a restriction on children being given these transformative drugs. Okay? We're trying to protect children. Now, you can argue, well, you have no right to do that. The parents have a right to do what they want to do. Well, do they? We have laws against giving kids alcohol, laws against giving them tattoos. They can't purchase cigarettes. They can't vote until they're 18. So the point here is that as a community, we have drawn a line in the sand about what young children should be allowed to do. Okay? So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it that I brought out was this whole question about woke in schools. Okay? And if you've heard me say before, and I'm certainly glad that Governor Ivey went ahead and fired the director of the pre-K movement, of the pre-K program, because of why? Because woke materials were being put into the system. Now think about that. Ivy, who has done nothing to stop anything pertaining to Common Core and the absolute absurdity of the whole Common Core business. Nothing. Okay? And I'm not going to repeat all this. We tried to get her in the summer of 21 to move against Common Core math as a starting point. You know the story. She didn't. Okay? She's going to start a study group. That study group turned into the Numeracy Act. Numeracy Act creates a $92 million every year bureaucracy to make sure that the math teachers are teaching math. Okay, the BS factor is so high here, I can't stand it. But notice how, at least this time, she took action against woke. So my argument to the city council that night, and I think it was the 22nd, not the 20th, my argument was, why are we embracing the Pride Fest given what the community values seem to be? So, as it turns out, this is the third year that they've had the Pride Fest. The first year was an absolute shock. Nobody knew where it was coming. The second year, some of our people went down and watched what was going on and came back with the evidence to show that this was obscene in many respects. This year, we've had people go down there and watch it again, and we've got more evidence along those lines. Okay, so this coming Monday at the next city council meeting, we're going to bring all of this out again and see exactly why it is that Fairhope has to allow public property to be used for this fest. If these folks want to rent someplace, you know, or a private organization, as they did have a pride, drag show
this
on Sunday
WABI,
downtown.
Mobile, Fairhope. Great,
there were protesters there, but in my view, if these business people want to do that, that's up to them. At least this business decided that they would have 18-year-olds. You had to be 18 to get in. My point here is that this is an ongoing issue too, and that the community has to be involved with this. Keeping Fairhope friendly to families is not just a slogan. It's real. Okay? Now, Lori's not here, so I'm not getting the signal, but Mark, being generous today, is going to give me another 30 seconds, I think. All right, so we've covered a lot today. I do think that I want, you know, Commander Cox to come back and talk more about the China thing. He couldn't make it today, so maybe next week we'll try to do it. But I urge all of you all to stay involved with everything that's going on. I mean, we're getting hit with this, that, and the other. We need to stay attentive to what's happening and get our officials, whether state or local or congressional, to stay in the game. I mean, this business of fiscal sanity isn't something that I invented today. Fiscal sanity, fiscal responsibility is the heart of the conservative approach to doing, you know, any kind of governance. We need to make sure it's happening. So Mark, good seeing you today. Thank you for being a so generous with the time. Okay. All right. See you all next week. Take care. Bye.
And you've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. And
anonymous donor.
Okay, and an anonymous donor as well. Okay, and we thank everyone for joining us. Let's get back to music right here on 1480 WABF.